I am Catherine Davis sharing this time with you. Please do stay tuned for Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. There is a lot to talk about on a day such as today. The sun is shining beautifully, as it happens, after what was called a blizzard and snowstorm. I'm sure there were parts of the city and the East Coast where there really was a true blizzard and piles of snow, or at least I'm guessing so. But somehow, I enjoyed the snow actually, but somehow it is not too reminiscent of the old snowstorms in New York City where we used to have piles of snow and schools had to be shut down and all kinds of, once they cleaned the streets, the snow was almost a story tall. Okay, I'm exaggerating a little, but we used to have really, really big snowstorms in New York, and I've noticed that this one, from my perspective, from my vantage point, wasn't such a big storm. It was steady, and it was cold, but something about it for me was quite pleasant. I enjoyed the snow, and I kind of wish that it had stuck around a little bit more, where you see the lovely snow. I was talking with a friend and she was saying, oh, I wanted to see the snow in the trees. And I remember how nice that is, but somehow we didn't get that this time. We didn't get the loveliness of the snow. It snowed through the night and in the morning we saw the messy cleanup. So maybe we'll get another nice storm before the winter is over and be able to truly enjoy it. I'm one who enjoys the Northeast because I enjoy the seasons. I like that transitional change from spring to summer to autumn to winter. It is reminiscent of the seasons of life and it's reminiscent of how we need to go through our life adapting and changing with our environment. And there's a certain connection to nature through these transitions in weather. So I enjoy it. And I suppose there are many who do. Though it's nice to vacation in a sunny spot, a sunny place. Unfortunately, we're living during a time when considering frivolous vacations and sunning on some beach somewhere, probably not our biggest concern or even something that we will be able to gain access to because of the restrictions that we are having a quandary with regard to the situation with the ongoing virus. And in a way, it's a little bit like an infestation. If you get any kind of bug infested in your apartment or your house, it could be bees, it could be ants, it could be fleas, it could be roaches, whatever it is, there's just this growing infestation. And there needs to be some way to reduce that and cleanse your environment. And here we are in a situation where it's our bodies that we have to keep cleansed of viruses and pathogens by building the immune system as well as by taking certain kinds of actions that might help us not become infected or if we do to keep the symptoms under control. So really it's about having a strong immune system but also being able to have information, which I find to be the most difficult part of this whole episode, is that we don't have access to real information. And a lot of what I see in the media somehow feels like it's controlled, like there is a underlying motive to the way things are being dealt with. You know, there's the divisions in the political parties. There's the division between the, in terms of economic benefit. And I say that because I have been concerned all along that safe, effective treatments have been available, but are not being allowed, either through censorship of the information or availability, accessibility to certain things. And also, I think there's this tendency within the mainstream to rely upon the strict status quo and not challenge some of the things that we're being told. So now we're facing this situation with a possible vaccine. Will it work? Well, nobody knows for sure. Will it help? I mean, certainly there's a great deal of medical professionals that believe that it will help. I think that there is a lot of confusion and doubt amongst the population. I feel personally somewhat doubtful that there was adequate testing. I'm a little concerned about the construct of the material that's in this treatment. So I do have real concerns about it. It would be wonderful if it were a panacea. I don't know if that's possible because viruses mutate. So I don't know what that means in terms of if, like with the flu, you can get vaccinated for the flu. Next season, it's a different flu. And the next season, it's a different flu. So I'm not sure that we can rely upon those kind of things. And it would make much more sense from my perspective that we work on building our immune system and building our health and becoming strong within the world so that we can, as much as possible, fight off whatever pathogens come down the road, come down the pike as we go forward in time. But I have done a lot of research on it, and I have been concerned about the availability of certain kinds of treatments that seem to be working in other parts of the globe. And so I'm going to play for you a bit of a testimony on a Senate hearing, and it's on the state of pandemic and development of outpatient treatments. And so this is a Senate hearing. I believe it is through Homeland Security, which, you know, I don't know how I feel about that either. But be that as it may, I find it very interesting that it allows us to look at the perspective of a particular doctor. And so we're going to hear Dr. Pierre Corey and his testimony. And I just want to put it out there as a piece of information. I haven't seen it widely covered in the mainstream media, though I found it on YouTube. I believe it was covered by 13 and other news broadcasters, but I didn't hear a lot about it. So I wanted to play it for you because this particular doctor is quite passionate and caring, it seems, from my vantage point. So we'll see. Let's have a hear of Dr. Pierre Corey. He's being introduced now.
Our next witness is here in person, Dr. Pierre Corey. Dr. Corey is the former associate professor and chief of the critical care service and medical director of the Trauma and Life Support Center at the University of Wisconsin, and recently joined the ICU service at Aurora St. Luke Medical Center in Milwaukee. He is board certified in critical medicine, pulmonary diseases, and internal medicine. Dr. Corey has traveled across multiple states in the U.S. to care for COVID-19 patients throughout the pandemic. He is also the president of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, a nonprofit organization of critical care specialists led by Professor Paul Merrick, whose mission over the last 9 months has focused on the research and development of effective treatment protocols for COVID-19 using repurposed drugs. He received his MD from St. George's University School of Medicine, and I'll only add that we added Dr. Corey very late to our hearing in May, because I'd heard of his development of, I guess, anti-inflammatory steroids in critical care on COVID. And Dr. Corey, I have to tell you, I've had doctors come up to me and thank me for holding that hearing where they listened to you, change their thinking. They believe they've saved their patients' lives because of your testimony at that hearing. I hope your testimony will be as impactful today. Dr. Corey.
Senator, thank you, and thank you for holding this hearing. I just want to start out, I didn't think I'd have to say this, but I want to register my offense at the ranking member's opening statement. I was discredited as a politician. I am a physician and a man of science. I have done nothing but commit myself to scientific truth and the care of patients. And to hear that I'm here because of a political angle, I am not a politician, I'm a physician. I want to start out by saying that I'm not speaking as an individual, I'm speaking on behalf of the organization that I'm a part of. We are a group of some of the most highly published physicians in the world. We have near 2,000 peer-reviewed publications among us, led by Professor Paul Marek, who is our intellectual leader. We came together early on in the pandemic, and all we have sought is to review the world's literature on every facet of this disease, trying to develop effective protocols. You just mentioned that I was here in May, and I recommended that it was critical that we use corticosteroids in this disease when all of the national and international healthcare organizations said we cannot use those. That turned out to be a life-saving recommendation. I am here again today with a new recommendation. In the last 9 months, in our review of all of the literature as a group, again, we are some of the most highly published physicians in our specialty and the world. We have done nothing but try to figure out how to identify a repurposed and available drug to treat this illness. We have now come to the conclusion after 9 months, and I have to point out, I am severely troubled by the fact that the NIH, the FDA, and the CDC, I do not know of any task force that was assigned or compiled to review repurposed drugs in an attempt to treat this disease. Everything has been about novel and or expensive pharmaceutically engineered drugs, things like tocilizumab and remdesivir and monoclonal antibodies and vaccines. We have 100 years of medicine development. We know we are expert in all the medicines we use, and I do not know of a task force that has been focused on repurposed drugs. I will tell you that my group and our organization, I will say that we have filled that void. That is all we have done is focus on the things we know and things we do. And I'm here to tell you, Dr. Reiter, he just presented. He has one study of the many that I want to talk about. And I want to talk about that we have a solution to this crisis. There is a drug that is proving to be of miraculous impact. And when I say miracle, I do not use that term lightly. And I don't want to be sensationalized when I say that. That is a scientific recommendation based on mountains of data that has emerged in the last 3 months. When I am told, and I just had to hear this in the opening sentence, that we are touting things that are not FDA or NIH recommended, let me be clear. The NIH, their recommendation on ivermectin, which is to not use it outside of controlled trials, is from August 27th. We are now in December. This is 3 to 4 months later. Mountains of data have emerged from many centers and countries around the world showing the miraculous effectiveness of ivermectin. It basically obliterates transmission of this virus. If you take it, you will not get sick. I want to briefly summarize the data. My manuscript, again, published by some of the most, we have contributed more to the medical knowledge of our specialty in our careers than anyone else can claim as a group. And our manuscript, which was posted on Medicine Preprint Server, details all of this evidence. I want to briefly summarize it. Number one, we have evidence that ivermectin is effective not only in prophylaxis, in the prevention. If you take it, you will not get sick. We just came across a trial last night from Argentina by the lead investigator of ivermectin in Argentina, Dr. Hector Carvalho. They prophylaxed 800 healthcare workers. Not one got sick. In the 400 that they didn't prophylax with ivermectin, 58% got sick. 237 of those 400 got sick. If you take it, you will not get sick. It has immense and potent antiviral activity. We know that from the first study in Monash, it has made the bench to the bedside. Prophylaxis, we now have 4 large randomized controlled trials totaling over 1,500 patients, each trial showing that as a prophylaxis agent, it is immensely effective. You will not get sick. You will be protected from getting ill if you take it. In early outpatient treatment, we have 3 randomized controlled trials and multiple observation as well as case series showing that if you take ivermectin, the need for hospitalization and death will decrease. The most profound evidence we have is in the hospitalized patients. We have 4 randomized controlled trials there, multiple observation trials, all showing the same thing. You will not die, or you will die at much, much, much lower rates. Statistically significant, large magnitude results if you take ivermectin. It is proving to be a wonder drug. It has already won the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 2015 for its impacts on global health in the eradication of parasitic diseases. It is proving to be an immensely powerful antiviral and anti-inflammatory agent. It is critical for its use in this disease. We, again, stand by our manuscript. It is a scientific manuscript. It's been submitted for peer review. But please recognize, peer review takes time. It takes months. We do not have months. We have 100,000 patients in the hospital right now dying. I'm a lung specialist. I'm an ICU specialist. I've cared for more dying COVID patients than anyone can imagine. They're dying because they can't breathe. They can't breathe. They're on high flow oxygen delivery devices. They're on non-invasive ventilators and or they're sedated and paralyzed and attached to mechanical ventilators that breathe for them. And I watch them every day. They die. By the time they get me in the ICU, they're already dying. They're almost impossible to recover. Early treatment is key. We need to offload the hospitals. We are tired. I can't keep doing this. If you look at my manuscript, and if I have to go back to work next week, any further deaths are going to be needless deaths, and I cannot be traumatized by that. I cannot keep caring for patients when I know that they could have been saved with earlier treatment, and that drug that will treat them and prevent the hospitalization is ivermectin. I am here today. I'm calling to action. The NIH, their last recommendation was August 27th. August 27th. I want to be clear. I am not here as a politician or a dramatist or sensationalizing what I'm recommending. I am going to be very clear and very simple. All I ask is for the NIH to review our data that we've compiled of all of the emerging data. We have almost 30 studies. Everyone is reliably and reproducibly positive, showing the dramatic impacts of ivermectin. Please, I'm just asking that they review our manuscript. It is a serious manuscript by serious, highly experienced physicians and researchers. I cannot call on more credibility than we have. We're not just a random doctor who's saying that we have a cure. I don't want to say I have a cure. I'm just asking review our data. We have immense amounts of data to show that ivermectin must be implemented and implemented now. Senator, the last thing I want to say is, you know who's dying here? It's our African-American and Latino and elderly. It's some of the most disadvantaged and impoverished members of our society. They are dying at higher rates than anyone else. It's the most severe discrepancy I've seen in my medical career. And we are responsible to protect those disadvantaged members. We have a special duty to provide countermeasures. The amount of evidence to show that ivermectin is life-saving and protective is so immense, and the drug is so safe. My colleagues have talked about it. It must be instituted and implemented. I am asking the NIH to review our data and come up with recommendations.
That was pretty amazing. I had to cut that off because, yeah, ads. Didn't want that to happen. Yeah, so I was very much inspired by this particular presentation and the physician who very passionately asked that the powers that be, the NIH, National Institutes of Health, review the data that is being presented from ivermectin. What I'm actually hearing, I'm not going to keep playing videos for you, is that it's become even more restrictive, and physicians who had been using up to this hearing are no longer even able to prescribe it because pharmaceuticals are not providing it in some cases. I mean, pharmacies are not providing it. And so to me, this highlights all along this emphasis on the highly produced chemical remedies, but it seems to be guided by profit. If a big pharmaceutical industry can make profit from it, then I see all kinds of favor. But for something that's not patentable, maybe in the public domain, a generic that's working and has been working and has a long history of working is somehow restricted from use. And so from my perspective, I don't know. I'm not a physician. I don't know exactly what's true. But I think we have to consider these things. If there's something that people could be using to bring down the infection rates, to save people's lives, that's what we should be advocating for and demanding that this be taken seriously. So I just wanted to put that out there as an alternative for all of us to think about ivermectin. I covered this maybe a month or two ago, as it was coming out to be a very promising viral drug that could be used, or it goes after parasites and things such as that we might be able to use. And it was looking very good back then. And now it seems that it's proving to be very good remedy, solution that people can have. And if there is a real medical solution that is as simple as a drug that's been on the market for years, at least, if not decades, did we need to have all these draconian fear-based lockdowns? And did we need to have to be told we have to wait for the appropriate vaccine to come along? I mean, I think that makes sense when you don't have any information. But if you start to have information that there is something that we could be using to save people's lives, then I think we need to demand that be given us as a choice. Let a person choose. But to deny the information and deny the access, to me, would amount to a crime against humanity, a crime against all the people who are sick, are yet to become sick, or who have lost their lives when we are operating under a system that is looking to profit off of the suffering rather than provide solutions that may not bring great profit to the industry. So I think that that's where the real problem is. That it's why the fight for Medicare for All is so ardent right now, because the pharmaceutical industry is a big lobbyist, and they give a lot of money to campaigns, and they give a lot of money to the parties, the major parties, and give a lot of money to politicians. And, you know, things are such that regulators and companies are switching places. So a person who was doing a regulation for the government will leave and become an employee of a drug-based industry, and vice versa. So we have some issues. We do have some issues to contemplate. Coming back, I'm going to move directions and look at the time and space that we're in. I'm going to take a little bit of musical break, and then I will return.
Hey.
And that was Douglas Spotted Eagle, and one of my favorite pieces of music, Sunrise Prayer. And so I wanted to give some thought to this idea of the cycles of time. And an interesting question that I read online, and something that I've been thinking about, is 2012 really supposed to be 2021? So the shift of the ages according to the Mayan calendar suggests that events would be stirred up during a period of 2012. And one of the interesting things about the actual 2012 as we know it, not much happened. And so it's interesting, there's a comment here. The numbering of years is a construct of the Gregorian calendar and takes the presumed year of Christ's birth as its starting point. Other cultures use other reference points. And so this is true. There are many, many different calendars based on different reference points. And we cannot always rely upon what the intellect of the West determines to be the truth of another culture. In the book 2012 to 2021, The Dawn of the Sixth Sun, Sergio Magaña has an inclusive way of explaining it as it's a shifting period. According to the Toltec-Aztec calendar, which describes larger cycles of time or suns than the Mayan calendar, humanity has been in a transition that started in 1991, moving from the fifth to the sixth sun. During this shift, the influence of both suns is equally present, as in the case when the seasons change. This shift is also a shift in human consciousness, in our understanding of how we relate to the whole of existence. The custodians of this 14,060-year uninterrupted oral tradition, which is, whom is Sergio Magaña, he reveals this ancient wisdom in his book. And it's really interesting. I mean, I've spoken with Sergio many times and studied in his classes. And he does have a really interesting way of teaching this period of shifting that we're living within. And the reason I've come to question if it's not 2012 but 2021, well, that was part of the shifting period that Sergio spoke of, but also it's the same numbers, 2012, 2021. It's just reversed at the end. And the other reason that I'm having this conversation is that because now is the time when all of the events are occurring, the movement of the spheres, the movement of the planets, the movement of energies, the changes, the earth changes, the conflicts in the earth. It's what we're looking at is more recognizable as what was predicted for those earlier years. So it makes me wonder if we look at the signs, that might be a better way of understanding what's truly going on. So I'm not an astrologer. I don't really follow myself, but I have an interest in it. And so I wanted to look for a video that could tell us a little something about what's happening with the planets. And I found a piece by Steve Judd. He's an astrologer. He's British, but he's very critically clear, and I enjoy his readings. It's not so much predictions, but interpretations. So I want to look at that.
In a little tent, and oh, just like the river I've been running. It's been a long.
And the moon moved into Aquarius this morning. And Jupiter is now in the final half of a degree, the final third of a degree of the last degree of Capricorn. And Jupiter will be moving into Aquarius in about, 40 hours from now. So we're leaving all this Capricorn energy behind. In fact, particularly in this last couple of days, with the moon sweeping up as it passed over Jupiter and over Saturn and over Pluto. And thank you to the few people who sent me some actual real-time photos of it, who were in a position to see it in the sky and sent me some photos. Thank you for that. Not a lot's changed in the world, except that existing situations seem to be getting worse. Yes, the President of France has got COVID. Yes, there seems to be ever more political instability in Turkey and Israel and various countries of the Middle East. Yes, Australia and China are scrapping. Yes, the Indian farmers are really, India is heading into a major constitutional crisis, and it seems like the government there is heading into an ever narrowing, it's like being on the inside of a pencil sharpener. In America, there's the great white whale sulking. In Britain, we've got an absolutely incompetent prime minister who's just shirking responsibility. So nothing's changed. The world's still in a bit of a crazy mess. But in the next few days, there's going to be some very interesting developments. Yes, we've got Jupiter moving into Aquarius. Jupiter actually moves into Aquarius when? Let's have a look. Jupiter moves into Aquarius at 1:08 in the afternoon on Saturday. That's UK time. 13:08 GMT on Saturday. Perhaps more significantly, yes, let's follow that track through. Saturday afternoon, Jupiter moves into Aquarius and will join with Saturn. By that time, the moon will have moved in already on into Pisces just. But on the 21st, we've got the solstice at 10:03 in the morning, GMT, UK time. And that's when the sun will be overhead, over the Tropic of Cancer, I think. I always get my tropics mixed up. And in the Northern Hemisphere, it's the time of the shortest daylight and the longest night. And in the Southern Hemisphere, the reverse. Solstice, sun still. But also on the 21st, Jupiter and Saturn are conjunct each other. And whereas solstice is at 3 minutes past 10 in the morning, Jupiter and Saturn are conjunct at 22 minutes past 6 in the evening on the 21st. That's Monday. Now, there's a bit of confusion over something I've said earlier. Jupiter and Saturn conjunct each other every 20 years. Almost precisely. But there's a kind of cycle here with Jupiter-Saturn conjunctions. They stay in one element, fire, earth, air or water, for a long period of time, like hundreds, if not thousands of years. And then slowly they shift from one element to another. And this is what's happening now. The Jupiter-Saturn conjunction is changing elements from air to earth, or vice versa. I'm never quite sure on these things. It's over such a long period of time. And it doesn't actually mean anything except in long-term, large-scale historical contexts. But for the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction to be occurring on the solstice is pretty significant. But even here in the background, there's still something else going on that I need to bring to your attention. Mars in the sky has been slowly moving forward in Aries since it stopped going retrograde around the 11th of November, 15th of November, something like that. And now Mars has been inching forward. Stopped going retrograde on the 14th, according to my tables. Yes. So since that time, in the last 4 to 5 weeks, Mars has been slowly inching forward, and now he's beginning to pick up speed. And as I speak, Mars is at 21 degrees of Aries. He will be squaring Pluto shortly. Mars will square Pluto precisely in 6 days' time, on the 23rd. And then Mars is heading towards early Taurus, and Mars will move into Taurus and leave Aries after 6.5 months. Of being there in the early part of January, and
this is the dawning of the age.
Mystic crystal.
A lot of you will recognize that the fifth dimension with Aquarius and Let the Sun Shine In. And this is really a significant thing that we are really looking to be at that point of transition with the Jupiter and Saturn's great conjunction on December 21st, which is the solstice. And they will only be 0.1 degrees apart on the day of the solstice. And from my perspective, that coming together of these planets in Aquarius, the sign of Aquarius, is a sign of a transition. And this is the true reset. Not the silly reset we're looking at in the globalist world, but this is the natural world's reset. And we need to, if we can, align ourselves with that energy and not adopt all of the fear-mongering that is distracting us from that essential core truth. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, Kathy, I was wondering if you could integrate a little bit more. I've heard something about an 800-year period, and since Jupiter, the Jovian giant's energy, and Saturn, perhaps, you know, in a Saturnian or, you know, Satan-like energy, is this maybe, since it's the winter solstice also, sort of the death and then the reopening? So maybe in a perspective way, we could say it's the darkest before the dawn. Do you feel that this, you know, reconciles falsities in the past? And when the gentleman who was before speaking, your quotes seem to suggest the significance to me, if you could explain, going from elements from water to earth, that would be appreciated.
I don't know that I'm qualified to do that. I could just give my take on it. And I just want to say to the caller, I just put you in the board, so you'll be able to come up next. I think that if we strip everything back, we have to take into account that all of our associations with these planets and these philosophies are distorted.
Yeah.
You know, so I think we have to look at even the question, in the sense that Saturnalia, what does it really all mean? So it's hard for me to make that distinction. I have been studying the calendars a tiny bit, in terms of the Aztec, the Mayan, a little bit of the Ethiopian, a little bit of the Dogon calendars. And they operate on such a completely different system, it's not even comparable. So, for instance, the Ethiopian calendar this year is 2012. The year that they're living in there right now is 2012. So it's not the numbers and the names. It's the, if you look at what's happening in the larger picture, you get a better sense of what's happening. And so according to the Aztecs, going into the sixth sun means that we're transitioning out of the intellectual, not so much intellectual, but sort of physical world of conquering, and moving into a more internal spiritual world of, so in the current time, technology is external, and that's going to continue, but we're entering into an age when we're returning to our own internal technology, our
wonderful
internal
that's certainly
alchemy.
What you do in your program. And so I thank you so much, because after the snow and we're all feeling shuttered in and sheltering against, you know, the solstice, it also seems to give us, you know, the new birth of hope. So thank you, and Happy New Year.
Thank you also. And I would say for the solstice is the time to go into meditation and begin to bring forth meditation, because the energy is such that it can fuel what your intentions are going forward. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I want to thank you so very much for your shows. I've been listening to you for quite some time. When you reintroduced me to the Dogon people and their astrological studies and basically charting the sky. And I appreciate that your program that you're having today is very informative. And just a word just to basically repeat, but I don't think it could not be said enough, that you are quite an asset to WBAI because you have always remained constant in your struggle and in your honesty, and I totally appreciate that, and I'm sure the listeners do too. In regards to the previous small segment of your program where you had aired the doctor giving his plea in regards to a medicine that is no longer available by prescription, is it possible for you just to repeat the name of that medication and perhaps even spell it out? I really would like to do some research on that.
Yes, please do, please do. It's called ivermectin. I might have closed the window, so I'm not, let me just spell it in my browser and see. Ivermectin, ivermectin. And ivermectin, and it, what came up, the FDA-approved drug, ivermectin, inhibits the replication of SARS-CoV-2 in vitro. And this is a study that's the first thing that came up when I put in the name. So there's evidence for it. But unfortunately, our system is guided by the profit-based pharmaceutical industry, and they can't make profits from things such as this.
Right. And I thank you again. You say that this is the time of the year where we should meditate.
Yes, absolutely.
And I thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And keep on keeping on.
Thank you. You're so kind. Thank you so much.
Okie
doke. Bye-bye. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. And I'm actually quite excited, even though things look very bleak. The truth is here underlying that can rise if we advocate for it and demand that we not become subject to a very small perspective on what we can do to preserve our health and well-being. So I would suggest for this solstice, we all go into a meditation and really activate our own power to be able to get out there and create the world that is expected to happen, is anticipated. This is the time for humanity to rise. That's what the whole solar system is telling us. And we have a small cadre of money-based thinkers, controllers, who want to manipulate this specific time to take us out of our deeper self, to separate us from our own innate wisdom through these fear of outside dangers. I'm not suggesting that there aren't those outside dangers. I'm not suggesting that the virus is not real and is indeed a danger to us, but we don't have to succumb to that. There are FDA-approved drugs available if they would allow us to have it. There are other things we can do to supplement and improve our immune system. So we are very powerful, and I think that that's what we have to really, really think about. That's what we really have to think about. So I want you to think about that as I go to